Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Toolshed, the only podcast on the internet that also doubles as a bomb shelter from the nefarious Ninterrorists. I'm Bennett the Sage, this is Mark the Engineer, and, well, guess what time it is? It's that magical time of the year that gamers colloquially known as E3. Gamers Christmas. Well, not to me and Mark. Usually it's just something about, oh no, what will we have to put up with next year? But before we get to discussion about that, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
First off, you owe me $5 for using Ninterrorists. That is mine. It is mine, and you just stole it.
And I offered you the chance to intro this episode. You declined.
Yeah, but that doesn't give you wholesale right to just start stealing my wordsmithiness. Fuck you, buddy. How am I doing? Well, I just came back from Anime Next, in which I really didn't get to enjoy the convention because I was working the whole damn time on Bill and Greg's voiceover workshop, in which we spent 3 days, 6 hours weeding through 20 people who have all asked the question out loud, how do I get into voice acting? It went very well. All the contestants were very, very nice. Congratulations to our winners, whose names I did not catch because I was busy and exhausted and moderately overheated. Honestly, there were a few moments when it's like, yeah, heat stroke is possible. First day of Anime Next, it rained, but it was torrential rain, but it was just kind of like, you can deal with torrential rain. The Garden State Exhibition Center is large enough to accommodate most of the cons, so there wasn't really too much of a MAGFest 9 type issue.
Oh, God. I was lucky enough to miss that. The first MAGFest I attended was MAGFest 10, which was, I think, the first year they used the Gaylord.
That was the first year that they used the Gaylord, because MAGFest 9, it was the fever pitch smell of human perspiration and industrial strength Lysol. So that wasn't, human stench wasn't too much of a problem on the first day, thank God. And second day, beautiful weather. Third day, beautiful weather. I got to see a lot of people who I don't normally get to see. We played The Wait for the audience, which is a short film that I directed with Bill Rogers and Greg Hauser, who were the MCs of this whole shindig, which was narrated by our very own Chris Zito. And I say our very own, but he's really my very own. He's the Ben Affleck to my Kevin Smith. So
you'll cast him in everything?
I'll cast him in everything, even the shark from Jaws. So it was his first like big screen credit, and I made sure that he, you know, stood up and took a bow. I wanted to make sure that Zito got the credit that he deserved. So that all worked out very well. We pitched a whole bunch of swag, a bunch of shirts that said 100% grade A voice monkey. At the bottom it said works for and as food. And that worked out. Also, you might have seen that now in existence are anime abandoned pins. Now, how do you get one? We're going to get to that later in the show, but...
But as far as my week, or actually a few weeks, is concerned, it's been a while since we last recorded. We've been busy both on our respective ends. You with Anime Next, and me with trying to wrangle footage for upcoming Anime Abandoned, and... So while waiting for hard copies of what's going to be up on the chopping block next, I've actually had some time to just sit down and listen to the new Queens of the Stone Age album. And if you watched my favorite musicians list, you know they're one of my favorite bands. And I was completely blindsided by the fact that they had a new album coming out. Just shows you how much in the loop I am in, or not in, as it were. And I have not been able to stop listening to it. It is bar none my favorite album of theirs. Bar freaking none.
I've got nothing. I mean, honestly, I've fallen out of popular music, and I feel bad about it because I really should expand my library. But I've never really been into, because I worked in a music store for 3.5 years. Like, you kind of lose the taste for it after a while. You lose all general interest. Like, look, if it's not on a soundtrack, I don't fucking care. So I think it's great because I like Queens of the Stone Age a lot. Now, would I feel compelled to go and sample this album or listen to this album? Probably not. And that's mostly because I'm just so, like, the parameters of my world are just so dialed in that when something gets added, it takes so much consideration that by the end of it, you know, it's like, fuck it. I don't care anymore. It's just not going to happen.
I feel so frustrated with listening to music nowadays, especially because you feel like you have to set aside time just to listen to it, just to really absorb it, because especially for this album, because it's an entire album work. I mean, it's not like you got single filler. It's every song just kind of leads into another, and it's not like a concept album, but it is an entire album experience, much in the same way like Ziggy Stardust was an entire album experience.
Yeah, honestly, just the popcorn nature of all music in the last 10 years has rendered me completely not giving a shit. The last album that I bought actually was a Marshall Mathers LP because I realized that I didn't have it anymore, and I went, fuck, where did it go? Because, you know, CDs grow legs, so.
Especially if you have friends.
Absolutely. So, I bought that, and before that I bought the Bastion soundtrack because it's fucking beautiful. And anybody who's seen the Anime Abandoned sizzle reel knows that I bought the Elbow album, the Seldom Seen Kid.
Really? You know, I never pegged you as an Elbow fan.
Honestly, I want to get to the point where we just kind of start considering like music for short reels and trailers and things like that, because there's some big shit coming, and I'm not saying what's coming, obviously, even though there's little hints scattered all over Anime Abandoned lately as to what's coming. But we got to make sure that, you know, when we do the lead up to the episode, you know, to the episode where the big thing happens, that we get that music just fucking right. Because I'm a believer that trailers, that stingers, that PSs, they're all made and broken by the music that you choose.
Just look at John Carter's trailer for proof positive of that.
Yeah, or the Avengers trailer, which me and Kyle Hebert had a massive disagreement about that, because I just kind of thought that it was really stupid to use Nine Inch Nails in that trailer. I mean, Nine Inch Nails has scored many a good trailer, but in the Avengers trailer, it just made no goddamn sense. Like, why would you use a song that has such obvious lyrics? Like, this group of heroes just got together, and now it's you and me, we're in this together now. It's like, really? I need it fucking spelled out for me.
It's like a minute work music video.
Yeah, it's like when they made the Avengers trailer, they were trying to make it like almost like a television opening theme from like the 70s and 80s, where the theme's only purpose was to tell you what the show is.
Yeah, that is all too clear to me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a little bit more poetry than, say, something a little on the nose, which what you just described right there, or as I described a minute work music video. Have you actually watched the Land Down Under music video before?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Yeah, so we got to have a nice little powwow where we just go, because what was the one song that you were kind of itching to use from A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo?
Oh,
The Immigrant Song?
Yeah, The Immigrant Song.
Yeah, so, I mean, that might end up in there, because we're going to use it no matter what, because the cover of The Immigrant Song is really good, but, yeah, we gotta really figure stuff like that out.
And plus, enough time has passed since we can use it, and said, oh, you just use it because of the freaking Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trailer.
It's like, no, we used it because it's fucking good. It's because sometimes there's just albums that don't actually make it into stores because they're made specifically for the use of, you know, filmmaking. And BT and Nick Phoenix had made one called 10,000 Years Later. And it's an album that you can't buy and is entirely for the use of filmmaking. So the cost on licensing the music off of it is like fucking insane. And one song off of it kept getting played for about 3 months, but then it just disappeared. And you never heard it again. It's a song called Iron Fisted Mother, which they used for Speed Racer trailer and some kids movie. I know it ran the gamut where it's like, I know it's a really good song. I have the song and I play it when I'm driving just because it's like it's a really exciting song. But yeah, they just kind of didn't know what to do with it in Hollywood. Like, we'll just throw it behind Speed Racer because that makes sense. But then we're going to throw it behind this kid movie because the song is just exciting. So no, that shit just doesn't work all the time.
Yeah, especially for a song titled Iron Fisted Mother.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard it, I mean, I'll show it to you later, but it's a really, you know, when you put it to some really exciting video, it's really fucking good. And, you know, speaking on the whole, you know, use of music in trailers, I recently found myself rewatching the Dead Space 3 trailer.
Oh, you were linking me earlier. You were linking me covers of that In the Air Tonight.
Yeah, which I thought that, like, I thought that the cover that they used in Miami Vice was the actual fucking song, but it turns out that it's not, that it's a remix of the original song, which is fine, but there's no production information on it, and they haven't released it. And considering that Phil Collins is Phil Collins, I'm sure that it'll never see the light of day, which is a goddamn shame, because if you want to talk about the tingle that you feel when a trailer is really good or when a piece of music is really good, that fucking, that version of In the Air Tonight gives me such a fucking tingle straight down to the nerd balls. It's insane. And I'll never have it. And a lot of people are trying to kind of create it by, you know, by way of what's available, but it's just not going to be as good. Like, you can hear Isaac's helmet opening in the background and shit like that. Like, they tried to get rid of the wind noise and all the other stuff from the trailer. But honestly, man, like, just Phil, just fucking let them release the whole damn song. Just, it's good. I like it a lot.
I know. I think the sound effects and the Foley, as far as that, as far as the trailer is concerned, is what I think sold that cover of In the Air Tonight. Because when you showed me the where that cover came from, it sounded like new metal crap to me.
Yeah. But, I mean, it gets the general feeling right, but then it just kind of breaks down smack in the middle and it turns into yet another crappy new metal cover. So, you know, not all that is covered is good. Or do you hear me, Marilyn Manson? I bought this new Marilyn Manson album. Like, really, how many of the songs are actually his? One? Yeah, well done there.
I'm guessing you're a little bitter about Personal Jesus.
No, Personal Jesus worked out fine, I guess. But when we got into, like, This Is Halloween and shit like that, I'm just like, oh my fucking Christ, could you stop, please? Just fucking stop.
Hot Topic crowd.
Yeah. Like, you know what? Because I can listen to parodies and covers all day. And I've heard really good ones and I've heard really bad ones. Like, AFI's cover of Head Like a Hole fucking sucked. All right?
It's a flame inside.
It's just, I couldn't get my head around it because they made such a big deal about it. Like, Head Like a Hole is going to be in Grand Theft Auto 4. I'm like, all right, that makes sense. And then it's AFI's cover of Head Like a Hole. That makes far less sense. And then it sucks on top of that. And you're just like, fucking Jesus. Really? So, you know, all that is not covered is good, and, you know, all that is, you know, remixed from the masters isn't really good either, but this version of In the Air Tonight, like, I would give my left fucking nut to have that.
Speaking of songs that I felt did not make sense at all, remember that Grand Theft Auto 4 trailer that had Pruitt a Go in the background?
Yeah.
Like, really? You're drawing back from the Koya Anaskatsi well?
You know what it is that the current generation is completely ignorant to what came before it, except for, you know, the niche kitschy kids like us. So when they have to put together a trailer, it's all guys like our age and older, and they're just like, yeah, this will work because these fucking kids don't know what this is. You know, like, I can guarantee you that within that, in our lifetime, in the next 10 years, some trailer is going to have fucking ZZ Top in it.
Wait a minute. Hasn't that already happened?
ZZ Top in a trailer in the last few years? I haven't heard it.
That would completely surprise me because I could have sworn I heard LaGrange used in a trailer somewhere.
Like, the fucking Top has made it into a couple of movies, but...
I was like, I swear I could hear LaGrange in a trailer somewhere. Maybe it wasn't for film, but it was for television.
Maybe, I don't know, but you know what, I'm pro this idea, actually. Like, we need ZZ Top and more trailers, But yeah, I mean, that's what they get away with, you know? They get away with the idea that it's like nobody fucking knows who ZZ Top is. These kids don't fucking know who Phil Collins is.
Oh, we got an entire treasure trove just waiting for us in the past.
Yay! I mean, what's easier, coming up with some bullshit score that doesn't really kind of, you know, grab you where it's supposed to grab you, or just licensing music that's kind of old and collecting dust and no one's really listening to anymore and the current generation has no fucking idea what it is, and then using that as like, yes, we will use this music, because at this point it's either using good music with a really good voiceover track or using the goddamn elephant horn. Well, Bill, like, I'm stealing that joke because Bill Rogers said that over the weekend, where he just said, like, I'm fucking fed up with trailers, because most trailers don't even bother with voiceover anymore. The reason why this came up was because someone had asked the question about, you know, women doing the voiceover for trailers. And it's like, well, that's just like it's not happened yet, you know, in a grand scale. And it's probably not going to happen because voiceover in trailers is going away, especially since LaFontaine's dead. So now it's just this flash by flash jump cut fade to black, you know, and using the elephant horn in between. So it's bah, cityscape, bah, disaster, bah, woman looking into danger, bah, cars exploding, bah, bah, title.
World War Z.
Yeah. And actually, and he's totally right.
I don't think you saw this, but I actually did something like a live vlog with Spoonie during that whole After Earth fiasco.
Yeah, I watched it. I wanted to know why I wasn't fucking invited.
Because you weren't around.
Fucking bullshit. I want to be around when fucking Noah decides that he needs to get tanked over a movie that just completely wrecked his shit. Because I think that if I hammer him long enough, he'll just cry. And he'll never be able to edit that shit out.
Why are you being so mean, Mark?
Oh, God. Because, like, I've never talked to Miles. I've never been in on these little, you know, escapades where he goes out and sees a movie that he knows he's going to fucking hate. But I want to be invited. I want to be around and invited and just sit there and watch the train wreck happen. Because that's my personal entertainment. I do all this work. I keep my head fucking down, head in the sand constantly. I work in a fucking vacuum. I almost never have any time for, like, personal fun unless I'm working on my car, if, you know, some new game that I'm really interested in comes out, or if there's a movie I want to see. And that's not – and none of those things are all too often. But if you tell me that Noah's going to turn on the camera and he just saw a really shitty movie, fuck, man, I will drop everything I'm doing to watch a human being self-destruct.
Especially him.
Oh my God. I will drop every fucking thing I'm doing. Like, sorry, Benny, the fucking anime abandoned PSD that I gotta work on right now, that's gonna have to wait because I gotta go watch Noah make an ass of himself in front of a bunch of people and get totally ripped.
And I would join you. I mean, if our relationship is me flicking peanut shells at you in a tiger cage, my relationship with Noah is me holding a bottle of booze over a recovering alcoholic. It's like, come on, Wino, come on.
It's like, you, like, no one told you to go to see the M. Night Shyamalan movie with Will Smith in it. You did that to yourself.
You got no one to blame but yourself. But you know who doesn't blame you? Mr. Jim Beam.
Jim Bean's your friend. He'll make the bad man go away. Blah, blah, blah,
blah. Oh, who's joining the party? Why, it's a captain. The Captain Morgan.
Oh, that would be fantastic. That is, that's really all it is. Because it's just, you know what? There are people who simply cannot handle the tragedy that they beset upon themselves. I went out to a theater, I handed money over to the ticket taker, and I said, I would like two tickets to see Last Airbender, please. And when I got out of that movie, I didn't drink myself into a stupor. I just GPSed where M. Night Shyamalan's house might be. That's all.
Just, you know, for future reference.
Just for future reference, you know, he comes down in his house out somewhere in the sticks of Pennsylvania as a pile of smoldering ash with a sign that says Earthbender for life. You know, like, just something, anything.
Oh, I haven't asked you this. Are you a big fan of Avatar The Last Airbender?
I am. I really am. I always tell people, you know, if you haven't seen Avatar, and this even goes for our audience, if all of your friends are telling you watch Avatar, they're not wrong. But you have to endure 12 episodes in the first season where it's like a kid's show. After the 12th episode, shit gets real. And after shit gets real, it never goes back to kiddie shit ever again.
I'm sorry, but you're having a real hard time selling this on me. Like, it's 12 episodes of kiddie shit, okay? You're going to have to grit your teeth through 12 episodes. 12 episodes? Fuck you, 12 episodes.
Well, 12 episodes, like I can't help that. I can't help the fact that it is 12 episodes of Kanitsko and DiMartino going, you know, like how long before we get to Dark Harvest. But that's just it, is that every person who does something ambitious with Nickelodeon, they kind of have to ease them in, you know, like you don't just stick the cock in. You just kind of slowly ease it in and you pull it out and you like it's like you don't, because elsewise it's rape. And you don't,
especially when it's with children,
you don't rape Nickelodeon. And because if you rape Nickelodeon, then that means that you're raping the audience, and the audience, which is children, is being monitored by their parents. So had they gone straight into, you know, this whole idea of how messed up the world is in Avatar, then a lot of people wouldn't have got on the way that they did. It's not a difficult 12 episodes to sit through, but at first glance, these 12 episodes kind of don't play like the rest of the series do, because they really are just kind of easing you in and ingratiating the world to you. And then eventually, you know, by episode 13, you're off to the races and it's like, we are at war, you know, and that is it. So yes, I'm a big fan of Avatar. I am a supporter of Legend of Korra. I like it a lot. I like that there is a brown female protagonist in it, who's not Wafy. She's a fucking Valkyrie bitch. So,
at the start, I heard.
At the fucking start, they go.
But I heard as the series went on, she kind of went like. Ee.
Well, she gets a little Wafy because, you know, like, because they can't, because no series can really go at all without having, you know, the female protagonist or, you know, the female main character at one point show that she has a vagina. And you can just reference Hot Ice Hilda for that. But, yeah. Because Hot Ice Hilda is still one of my favorite characters in anime. Like, it pissed me off when she was killed. And it's like there's Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, always the baddest bitch in the room, no matter what.
You're just going to keep running away?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not running.
But, yeah, so it does get a little Wafy towards the middle, but, like, Korra just hits all the, just ticks all the right boxes for me. And this is up to and including the fact that they named a character Mako. And that's just classy.
My spirit lives on.
Hey, man, it worked for me. Like, as soon as they said his name, I was like, that is classy as shit. Thank you. Didn't have to do it, but you did it. That is super fucking classy. I'm good on that.
By the way, is it Mako or Mako? I can never get that straight.
It's Mako. It's Mako, and it's Lara Jill Miller. It's not Lara Jill Miller, people. Also, it is Carrie Payton. Found this out. It is, in fact, Carrie Payton.
Not
Kari Payton.
Okay, Carrie.
It's Carrie Payton. Okay, Carrie. So the drums of war have sounded. The natives are restless. E3 is here.
And one of us is more pissed off than the other. Can you guess who?
All right, so we'll top this off by saying that I didn't want to get into the E3 peanut throwing this year. I didn't get into it last year. I just figured that my buddy Zero Reynolds, he does it with me every year, and he's, you know, he's a force unto himself, and, you know, you follow him at Zergester. And I figured, like, well, if Zero's doing it, I don't really need to do it. But the thing is that it was just on all sides of me, and I couldn't get away from it. And I didn't want to do the fucking live peanut throwing at the press conference.
Which I took care of that for you, although I didn't do much peanut throwing during the Sony press conference. I wasn't awake during the Xbox conference, but turns out neither was Microsoft during the Xbox conference. But that's another story for later.
So I've been up all day, and news has been flooding in, and after a certain point, just something in me snapped like a fucking Twix bar. Like, I just lost it. Because the joke started, like, a couple of weeks ago where, you know, when the trailer for Sonic Lost World came out and they said, it's Nintendo exclusive. And I said, you know, I am not going to negotiate with Ninterrorists. It's not happening. I will sooner give up being a Sonic fan than I will cow to Nintendo, who is, by all means, in no uncertain language, holding shit hostage because their system is failing.
Need we point out Bayonetta 2?
Exactly.
Which, by the way, can I just say that short haircut looking bitch is not Bayonetta? Wasn't her suit made out of her hair? That's the reason why she had long hair?
Yes, her suit was made out of her hair. She is a hairmancer. And that was because I can't really think of like a clever, because they fucking didn't come up with a clever name for it.
It just felt like when they put it in Nintendo's meat grinder, as it were, they made it more kid friendly by saying, oh, no, she has regular clothes on. She's not naked. And like, and you know what? I get the PC aspect of that. I get it. But it wasn't so much about the sexiness with that attracted me to that. It was just the sheer off the wallness of it. I mean, her whole bodysuit is made out of her hair. And I was just, okay, that may not have any plot. It doesn't drive the plot at all, but at least that's like, huh.
That makes sense.
It doesn't really make much sense.
Well, it made sense for the character because, I mean, like, look at Eddie Brock. He never has to wear clothes. The suit is his clothes. And that's where they were coming from, is that, you know, like, if you could seriously say that you never have to buy clothes ever again, if you could just make a suit out of, you know, whatever amorphous material is attached to your body, would you really bother to buy clothes?
Well, if it was as form-fitting as Bayonetta, I probably would, because no one wants to see this in a leotard.
Well, yeah, okay, fine, yes, fat joke, huh, yes, you look like fucking gluttony. Anyway...
I know. I look like a tube of toothpaste that's just been squeezed in the middle.
So, but it made sense for the character. And if you actually scaled the camera in, you could see the texture of the suit and its strands of hair. Made all the sense in the world. That's perfectly fine. But Bayonetta was the first fucking casualty of Nintendo saying, shit, the Wii is tanking in the market. What do we do? It's just, that's okay. Just throw some money at it. You know, like, fuck you. So I've been
use our 3DS money and buy everything that we think will sell on the fucking Wii U.
Yeah, and they're holding shit hostage, and who knows what else it's going to be. So I've been doing these Ninterrorist method tweets all day, which a sampling of that is Ninterrorist method is idea crap. Yes. Have Reggie talk about it and say revolutionize or family. Is idea still crap? No. Success. And then the giant bomb dropped. The Smash Brothers trailer and the follow-up trailer to see new challenger approaching. At which point the tweets went from Ninterrorist method to Cap Communist method.
I don't think they're communists. I mean, if there's one word I would not associate Capcom with, it's communism. Well, this is pure capitalism through and through.
Yeah, but Cap Capitalist method doesn't really sound as good.
No. It doesn't.
So the Cap Capitalist Method tweet was, betrayal is the doorway to sales. Did creator leave? Yes. Hide character. Fans will offer soul to get it back. And it's true. And people have been banging down the doors and screaming and crying and tweeting and posting and podcasting and sending them angry letters. I have even seen there was a gigantic poster at Otakon where everybody could sign. And I mean, this thing was like 10 feet long. You could sign it, you could draw on it, and it was just a big fucking physical petition, and which was really classy. A physical petition to get Mega Man Legends 3 back. And I said, I'll totally do that. So I drew Preparation H-Man because Capcom's so butthurt.
God damn it, I should not be snickering at that.
It worked though, you know, like I said, can I draw anything? And the woman who was running the table said, yeah, you can draw anything. So can I draw Preparation H-Man because Capcom's so butthurt over Inafune? Do that, yes, please. So I did. And he had two gigantic tubes of Preparation H in tanks. And like hoses going into his arms and shit.
Oh, God. That is some classy bit of protesting right there.
So, you know, so that's... So they know. They know that we want Mega Man back. I want Mega Man back. I absolutely did. This is not getting Mega Man back. Smash Brothers is not getting Mega Man back. It's just satiating the fans over the fact that Mega Man was nowhere to be found, really, technically, in Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and that the fans have been screaming about having Mega Man in Smash Brothers since the original Smash Brothers. Here's the problem. They made Rock look like a fucking doofus.
Not gonna deny it.
The only thing that's right on him is his eyes. His eyes are the exact same eyes that they've been drawing for fucking ever. But his head is apple-shaped and chubby and weird-looking. His boots look fucking bullshit. He's completely fucking disproportionate. And the reason why is because you can tell, if you look very closely at it, exactly what it is the design requirement was. We don't necessarily care what he looks like, but make sure that in silhouette he looks like the 8-bit Mega Man. He needs to jump like the 8-bit Mega Man. He needs to slide like the 8-bit Mega Man. He needs to shoot like the 8-bit Mega Man. Never mind.
Our avatars are the 8-bit versions of Mega Man.
So, of course, we would fucking know. And that was done to make the fans pop. Because you can see, because even if you could not see all the details of it, if you just saw a black silhouette of that character model, you would know it's Mega Man. And the problem is that when you fill in the blanks of an 8-bit Mega Man in a 3D space and you're not doing it like 3D.game heroes, it makes for this weird, disproportionate, goofy-ass looking character. There's already a contemporary Mega Man, and the sprite sheet existed from Mega Man 8 onward. That was the best looking one. Why on God's earth did you feel that it was a good idea to go with the 8-bit version of Mega Man as the design requirement for this character model? Just to make the fans pop? Fuck you. I mean, yeah, okay, it's going to play like Mega Man in a fighting game. It's probably going to feel no different from how Mega Man has always felt in fighting games. That's not really the problem here. The problem is that he just fucking looks stupid. So you're kind of making a fool out of him. And maybe I'm just the angry one who doesn't feel the sense of whimsy, who doesn't feel the tickle in the nerd balls, the fizz, as James May calls it, when I see something that's very clearly fucking pandering. But maybe the problem is that I'm actually paying attention, and that I am completely fucking up to my neck in this shit. And since I'm up to my neck, I've had it up to fucking here. If you don't want Mega Man back, then just say you don't want fucking Mega Man back. But don't give me this bullshit token gesture where you make him look like a goddamn moron. He seriously looks like he's gonna be like, and here's my puppy, and I named him George.
Mark, it can always be worse. He could look like the skin in the Marvel vs. Capcom 3 DLC.
Yeah, but that's just fucking X, and I don't care about X. I've never really cared about X. I like Mega Man X. I love Mega Man X, to be very honest.
Wait a minute. Didn't you hear, I thought they were using Mega Man, but they're using the skin that made him look like what he did on the first Mega Man box art?
No. That was Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Oh,
Street Fighter Cross Tekken, the DLC was you got Mega Man, and it was the Mega Man box art Mega Man. But yeah. In Marvel vs. Capcom 3, it's a palette swap and a helmet swap, and it makes him look like X. I think that's what it was. So, because a lot of people were not very happy about box art Mega Man.
I would honestly, looking at Mega Man as he does in Smash Bros., knowing that I will never play that game because fuck you, I'm not going to get a Wii U. And fuck you, Brawl. Here's my deal on Smash Brothers.
Brawl sucked?
I'm not even saying Brawl sucked. I'm saying I played the original Super Smash Brothers, and that was fun. Then I played Melee and was like, huh, this is pretty much the same thing again. Okay, you know, it's good to pass a few hours, but I can't imagine me playing this for longer than 2 hours at a time or ever again, as it turned out. And then Brawl came out and I was like, I'm not even bothering. And
the only good thing about Brawl was Subspace Emissary. That's what I will say. And I know I'm committing heresy by saying that Brawl wasn't good, but Brawl wasn't good because for everybody that treats Smash Brothers like it's a serious fighting game, okay, let's use that. Let's treat Brawl like a serious fighting game. Explain to me the reason why it is that they tweak the gravity so that fucking Kirby falls like a downing feather. Like, everybody falls like they're just in 25% Earth's gravity. Because, honestly, you could smack somebody off a stage within 30 fucking seconds. And I'm talking about the top of a stage. Because the gravity's so low. And you play Heavy Brawl and you fall like a goddamn stone, but at least it feels like Melee. That... And Heavy Brawl, like, they should have found a middle ground between Heavy Brawl and Standard Brawl, because I just couldn't play the game. I was like, this is insane. This is completely insane. I mean, I understand that certain physics getting changed in order to adjust your tactics from game to game, but I can't understand the wholesale change of the way that gravity works in every single fight.
That is, that was just shit I was not even going to bother with. And... I don't know what it is with Nintendo fanboys. It's not like I was a Sega kid growing up. And it's not like I don't have fond memories of Nintendo growing up. I do. But that's my childhood. That's fine. It belongs there in my childhood. I don't need my childhood pushed in my face with next-gen graphics and expect me to pay even more money. It's like, no, I've grown up beyond that. You can't offer me anything new.
And that's the Nintendo sales pitch. It's Reggie getting on stage going, "Hey Bennett, you were 8 years old once." And you're going, "Yes, I was 8 years old once. I'm 23 now." Like, that's, but it's like, but it doesn't matter. You were 8 years old once. Here you go. Here's Ocarina of Time for the 50th fucking release.
Like, I didn't even like it when I played it the first time. Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I went there, people. I don't really like Ocarina of Time. Oh.
Ooh. Yeah, here's my thing. Like, I genuinely feel like there, a lot of people are saying Nintendo is playing it safe, which they are, because they always do. And the last time they didn't really play it safe was Metroid Prime. That was just... really, really off the reservation for them. But it worked, and it worked for three whole games.
I mean, like, you would think that would just encourage them. It's like, okay, there is some room to expand, but then Reggie's like, no!
And it's not to say that Reggie makes the decisions, but, I mean, Reggie's the face of the company at this point. He's been the face of the company for a decade. So he's the person that I'm going to fucking throw stones at. Like, it's... I have gotten to the point where I've made this joke so many times in private where I really think that Reggie knows that this is bullshit, but right before he gets on stage, someone comes by from Nintendo Japan and hands him a brown bag full of $200,000, and he starts counting it, and he's like, I don't know, I think that this stack feels a little bit light. I don't know if the 3DS really is going to revolutionize the way that you do handheld gaming. He's like, no, we're sorry, and then they hand him another $50,000.
It's like, this'll do.
And then he gets out on stage and he's like, the Nintendo 3DS will revolutionize the way that you do handheld gaming, and it's going to have a manufacturer suggested retail price of me raping you in the ass. You know, like, that's what Reggie does. And that's why it is that, you know, like, if Reggie's gonna be the face of the company, I'm gonna throw stones at Reggie. Period. Now, here's something that's been happening all day. Since I've been doing these Nintendo tweets, which a lot of people seem to find funny. I find them funny. I've been losing followers all day. I've lost like 10 followers today. And I'm fine with that. If you don't like to hear bad things about the Big N, that's fine. I don't do this all the time. I only do this once a year. And I smack everybody just about as equally as is necessary. If Microsoft pisses me off more than Nintendo or Sony, then Microsoft gets it. Same thing for Nintendo, same thing for Sony. Like, it's entirely interchangeable. But Nintendo has pissed me off thoroughly this year, right up until about an hour and a half ago, where the following statement just came out in an article on Kotaku. It says, can't get an Xbox One online? Buy an Xbox 360. Is there any way around Microsoft's mandatory 24-hour check-in on the Xbox One? Nope. But, well, there is one. It just doesn't involve buying an Xbox One. Speaking with Destructoid, Microsoft's Phil Spencer was asked what someone with no internet access would do if they wanted to buy an Xbox One. He says, quote, I mean, the analogy, and I don't know if it's a great analogy, let's say I live in an area that doesn't have cell service. I wouldn't go buy a cell phone. Now, I might roam in different areas where my cell phone becomes active. The 360 ecosystem is a great ecosystem for somebody that's in a purely disconnected state for long periods of time. We have built a natively connected service with the Xbox One, and we think the experiences are moving in that direction. Fuck you! This is the toaster thing all over again. If you don't have electricity, you wouldn't buy a toaster, would you? You can eat a dick. And I am a person who have had Xbox Live for 10 fucking years. I've got my XBL10 helmet. I've been very happy with the Xbox Live service. I've been happy to pay my $50, now $60 a fucking year. And you actually want to go and say that, well, if you don't have the internet, too fucking bad. Okay, what about game rooms at conventions? What about fucking tournaments? Do you mean to tell me that they need to hash out for a fucking T1 line now just so that they can run Xbox Ones in these rooms? Fuck your shit!
And in a follow-up, Matrick, I forgot, what's his name? Matrick something rather? Like Don Matrick right here. In a follow-up statement right here said, fortunately, we have a product for people who aren't able to get some form of connectivity. It's called Xbox 360, Matrick said. If you have zero access to the internet, that is an offline device. Which is technically true, but does this mean, does Matrick infer that they're going to keep pumping out games for the Xbox 360 for an extended period of time? Like they're trying to extend that console cycle?
And
then what's the point of getting an Xbox One?
And the answer is, probably, yeah, they're going to extend the half-life of the fucking Xbox 360, which, you know what, that would be all well and good if it weren't for the fact that they are so pompous. Okay, this isn't Microsoft. Like, this is Microsoft circa, like, the original Xbox when they had the advertisement that was, you know, Xbox superiority dominating in the gaming market. And, you know, like, I have a friend who, at the time when I asked her, I said, why don't you buy an Xbox? She said, I don't want to buy an Xbox. And this was when the original Xbox was out, because they seem really mean and pompous and full of themselves in the way that they promote the system. And at first, I couldn't quite get that. I was like, well, you know, you just fucking throw your weight around. You puff your chest out and you're like, yeah, man, where the fucking Xbox is where it's at. The Xbox is the truth. But now I get it. It's that unchecked hubris turns into the Xbox One. All of the humble nature of Microsoft being new to the gaming market is gone. They've got their 10 fucking years in, and now they're just like, well, we own you, you know? It's like, I don't get it. I don't understand why it is that it's turned from, you know, that they were kind of humble about it. Like, they originally were just posturing because they had to, because they were brand new, because it's like, Microsoft fucking powers my PC. I don't understand why it is that they're making games. But now, this is what it is. It's turned into unchecked hubris. That they are just going around saying, it's like, we can dictate exactly what your gaming experience is going to be from the time you turn it on to the time you turn it off and all the time in between when you're not playing it. And we're going to say that if you don't have an internet connection, a competent internet connection, an internet connection which, by the way, for the full Xbox One experience, needs to meet a certain minimum bandwidth requirement. So talk to your ISP and do a fucking speed test. They're saying that if you don't meet this requirement, that an Xbox One is 100% useless to you, which I think that would be limiting sales on purpose. I would think that that is shunting your own potential sales on purpose. And what's worse is that you're shunting the shunt because you're coming out and saying us not having internet is not your problem. And originally, originally, I actually was trying to rationalize this. I was trying to rationalize licensing to fucking Kaiser Neko. I was trying to rationalize licensing to you. How licensing is a part of our daily lives, and it has been for most of our lives. Licensing wasn't the problem. It never was the problem. I was trying to cross-sale that between the fact that going from 15,000 servers to 300,000 Xbox Live servers meant that they were probably going to get rid of the fucking backwards compatibility problem by way of doing what OnLive does with live game streaming. That is beneficial because it also means that you don't have to download gig-large demos anymore. But this is intolerable. This is the sort of shit where if your child did it, you would beat him fucking senseless.
And this is, I think, at the heart of the problem with Microsoft's problem is the fact that they think they could get away with this. This is this air of arrogance about Microsoft's advertising that just and PR that just suggests that we can do whatever we want with our system because our fanboys will buy it no matter what.
Which is all well and good. I bought an original Xbox. I bought a 360 at launch. And up until an hour and a half ago, I was going to buy an Xbox One, but congratulations, I am officially a PlayStation 4 person. Round of a fucking applause. That's it. And that is flying in the face of the fact that I don't like what fucking Sony pulled. I know that the PlayStation 4 was $500 right up until Microsoft said that the Xbox One was $500. And then they fucking scrambled and they got approvals and they said, drop it by 100 right now before you get on stage. We need to get approval to drop it by 100 MSRP. You fucking understand me? So they absolutely did the single most juvenile thing that they could, because they always do, because that's what they did to the fucking Sega Saturn. That's what they did to the Dreamcast. All right?
Yeah, that's I'm not denying that.
That's nothing new, okay? Every time something comes out that's even remotely as good or better than them, they just drop the fucking price of the console so that way everybody's happy and, oh, I'll buy it because it's cheaper. And now it's, I'll buy it because it's cheaper and the PlayStation badge is on it. I'll buy the PlayStation badge. I was kind of undecided before because I do like the Xbox a lot, but you want to know what? PlayStation is a byword for quality, and that quality is shown in the fact that it's $100 cheaper than the Xbox One. And you know what? That saves me $100 and a whole lot of fucking trouble because at this point, yeah, you know what? I'm a Halo fan. I'd love to play Halo 5, but I will not fucking cotton to this. I won't. I will not support this fucking hubris. So I'll see you at the fucking Xbox One launch, Microsoft, and you'll see me buying a fucking PlayStation 4. Do you fucking hear me?
Take a bow.
Jesus Christ!
And I'm sitting here, and I'm listening to you talk about this, and I realize something. I can never have that amount of passion for gaming. Gaming is a part of my personal history. Like I said in videos way time before again, there has never been a time in my life where I remember never having played a game. Like, it's just me and gaming. But I never, ever felt like a console betrayed me, or I felt like a game company had done me wrong. It's this weird sort of disparity between me and I guess gamers in general, because hearing this vitriol is so alien to me. It's like, it's almost incomprehensible for me to be like, even if I bought an Xbox day one, and even if I had a 360 day one and I was a huge Halo fanboy, I could never, like, I'd be angry, but I would never be like, about it. It's just not in me. And I think that's why I'm not as popular on the internet as Angry Joe is.
And see, I'm not the rage vomit guy. I am thoroughly against the rage vomit, all right? But because here's the thing about the rage vomit reviewer. It comes from a place of ignorance, okay? Because about 70% of the overall informed market is still massively misinformed or uninformed, and people are screaming and whining and bitching and moaning and complaining about shit that they don't quite understand, but they think that they grasp the concept enough that they can go so far as to just start like, this makes me mad, fucking Xbox One. And the thing is that I've never been that guy. I am not that guy. I would argue that I'm not that guy right now. But this is infuriating to me. And it is because gaming is a part of my life. It is because I always believe in the social aspect of gaming. And when the first news dropped where it's like you can't really lend games anymore, that kind of cuts into my whole worldview about the reason why it is that I love gaming is because gaming brings people together. I get that. I could understand the idea that, you know, the whole, you know, lending party thing is gone. It's like, let's keep a list and see who's borrowing what and whatever, and we'll have this cache of games. But I could forgive that for, you know, I could forgive that just as long as other things still worked. And for me, the kind of like, well, this, like, this is going away and this is going away and this is going away. But look at all the potential that we're building in the sense of building 300,000 servers for the Xbox Live service when the Xbox Live was nowhere near capacity. Made sense. All right, fine. You're gonna make the next generation of Xbox Live. It's gonna be the third generation of Xbox Live, and it's going to be phenomenal what's coming. But when they're talking about fucking toasters and electricity and fucking cell phones and what, you know, what the shit about this, like just fucking deal with it. I'm like, no, motherfuckers, you deal with it. And when I say deal with it, I mean fix it or flop. You understand? Fix it or fucking flop. Because you just managed to do exactly what Nintendo did when they released the Wii. Nintendo thought it was a good idea to leave hardcore gamers behind, and now they're a joke. All they've got left is their rabid fucking fanboys that unfollow me on Twitter, and moms and dads that don't know what to do with their goddamn Wii, so they use it as a paperweight. That's why it is that the Wii U absolutely now has so much third-party support with a bunch of games that, of course, we've played before, but they're just hoping that the token of showing that there are hardcore games on the system will get hardcore gamers back. What you are doing right now is you are gearing towards casuals. You didn't make a fucking game system. You made a goddamn sling box that can happen to play games, that just happens to play games. So you are about to make the same mistake. And it's not going to go well because Xbox fans aren't as rabid as PlayStation fans. And more importantly, you're fucking gouging them for $60 a year for your service while the PSN is free. And while PSN is massively inferior to Xbox Live, free is free, motherfuckers. And $100 is $100. And a system that I can take with me anywhere is a system I can take with me anywhere. And a system where I can trade my games in order to shunt the fucking cost of new games coming out of my pocket is exactly that. So pretty much what you're doing is you're doing what Sony did when they released the PlayStation 3 in terms of a bad price point and bad features. And you're doing what Nintendo did with the Wii in terms of just saying hardcore gamers don't fucking matter. The casuals and features and bullshit little circus tricks are your new market. So you enjoy that new market for the 3 years that it lasts. And in year four and year five, I'll see you when you decide that you're going to release the Xbox 2.
I will say this, though. It has been released that PSN Plus membership is required for online play for PS4. And that's the only blemish as far as the Sony press conference is released. But the difference between PSN like Plus membership and Xbox Live is
free games.
Free games cost the same amount without the year, you know, that year long commitment.
Yeah,
$5 a month.
Yeah, because here's what I'll do. As a person who's had Xbox Live for 10 years, I'll continue to pay for Xbox Live. That's what I will do. I will pay for PlayStation Plus, but I'm only going to keep Xbox Live because just in case Microsoft decides to flip like a waffle and fix this shit, I don't want to lose my gamer tag. That's it. I had to fight to get my gamer tag back when the Xbox 360 came out, and I'm sure as shit not going to lose it now. So, that being said, I'll continue to pay for Xbox Live, but I'm not going to buy an Xbox One, not until they fix this shit. And in the meantime, I'm going to start investing more in my PlayStation Plus account, which, as of right now, doesn't exist, but by the end of this podcast, it just may.
It just fucking may. And you know what? I kind of like the idea of a PlayStation Plus, because not only, all right, it's like Xbox Live, the whole, you know, letting you play online, but also gives you discounts and gives you free indie games.
Yeah, and that works for me. That's always been the one thing that's made PlayStation Plus kind of dwarf Xbox Live in terms of user friendliness or kind of the sense of, you know, like we care about our fans. Because let me just put this one on fucking Front Street. Sony fans, Sony doesn't fucking care about you, okay? They don't. They never have. They never will. Period. They know that you're stupid. They know that you only buy it because it says PlayStation on it. And that's why it is that the PlayStation 3 came out at such a fucking ridiculous price point, because they were banking on the fact that you have deep pockets and are stupid. When they figured out that you don't have deep pockets, but you're still stupid, and after they squandered all the goodwill that they had with the industry at large and all of their fans and all potential fucking consumers, then they did a fucking price drop, and then they decided to make the system just a little bit worse and a little bit worse and a little bit worse, until the point where the PlayStation 3 has gotten to be so watered down, it's barely a shadow of what it originally was meant to be. Sony does not give two shits about you. They have no sense of community. It's why fucking PlayStation Network sucks so fucking bad. But maybe with Microsoft fucking up so bad, they can actually make it out almost like, well, I was the abusive boyfriend, but that boyfriend was far more abusive. So getting thrown down the stairs is a whole lot worse than getting punched in the face every once in a while, isn't it? Yeah, come back to me, baby. Don't worry. We've got baseball and Infamous for you.
In Kingdom Hearts 3!
Yeah, it's not exclusive, doesn't matter.
Oh man. But wait, you can't play it on an Xbox One without giving up that ass.
Yeah, and that's really what this is. This is just a fucking drop trowel, close your eyes and take it scenario. That's all it is. And
the way I figure it, if a lot of the games I want to play are multi-platform, I might as well play it on a platform that doesn't cost me as much as the other one.
Yeah, so day one, I'm going to have a PlayStation 4 because this is bullshit. Like, I'm officially in that headspace now that this is bullshit. I don't want an Xbox One. I want Halo 5 more than any fucking thing on earth, but I do not want an Xbox One. I'm not willing to pay the price of admission, because the price of admission goes far beyond the actual price of admission. So I'm going to become a PlayStation person. Which, you know, it's been a long time since I've been a PlayStation person. And when I say a long time, I mean PlayStation 2. So, but that's where we're going. It's going to be me and you, Bennett, and we're going to be PlayStation people, because you're already a Sony guy.
Yeah. I'm already a Sony guy, I guess. I like the Sony controller more than the Xbox 360 controller, and we've had this argument many, many, many times before. And even though you make the point that the analog stick placement on the Xbox 360 controller makes more ergonomic sense, there really is no difference between, I feel, no real long-term difference between an Xbox controller and a PS3 controller. It's just that the PS3 wins out because I just know the buttons. Like,
that's because you're a gaming professional, not a professional gamer.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Drop the mic. But yeah, that's the sound of the engineer being pissed. And so I'm going to put down my $100 for my PlayStation 4, and I'm going to wait. That's it. Like, that's all there is to it. And we understand that there's lots of fucking talking heads and a lot of fucking flappy-headed assholes right now that are like, oh, Xbox One. But just understand that not everything that you hear is going to be very informed. And what I want to say is that I want you to inform your buying decision based on you doing research. Don't listen to the guy next to you. Don't even listen to me. Do your own research. Decide for yourself if an Xbox One is worth it. I've decided it's not. A lot of people have decided it's not, but they've decided for the wrong reasons. But But I, as an Xbox person, I as a fan of good games wherever they live, have decided that the Xbox is not for me anymore. Period. It's like, that's it. We're going to shake hands, part ways. It's been a good 10 years, but we're done.
And I decided that Xbox One was not the console for me as soon as I heard that Kinect was mandatory. It's like, even if they make it so like, oh, you have to connect to your Xbox One to turn it on anymore. It's like, well, all right, that's fine. But what am I going to do with this useless Kinect then? You made me buy this shit. I got no room for it.
And it doesn't account for people in small rooms. I mean, they improve the technology where it has low-level light vision, so you don't need to turn on every fucking light in the house in order to get the Kinect to work anymore, which is, you know, fine and dandy. And it's got more points of articulation, which is fine and dandy. But it is, you know, this piece of kit that's always on, always fucking watching you, always listening, and waiting for you to turn it on. It's something that's running on phantom power. That's not something I want. I don't want something that can be remotely activated whenever someone fucking feels like spying on me. That's just insane. And on top of that, there's lots of reports and speculation that really there's no security on Earth that can keep a consumer product like that from being hacked remotely. And then just people are just spying on your children.
That is just, even before any of this, the security updates came through the pipeline, I just knew that this was not a system for me from the get-go. It just seemed so unwilling to be a system to play games on. It seemed that was the last thing on their mind. What was the initial Xbox One announcement like? It was all about, hey, you can watch TV now. Couldn't I do that before?
Yeah, it's a box that happens to play games. It's not a console that's a gaming console. It's just a sling box that happens to play games.
It's like, I want a video game console, okay? Not a Roku.
Yeah, and that's all it is. That's what it's turned into. Now that they've got their, you know, they've got their asses firmly planted in the seat of Hulu and Netflix and all of these other streaming services, and, you know, the resurrection of Zune as a brand for the marketplace for movies and music, they've just decided that the best thing that they could do was make a multimedia box that happens to play games, which doesn't really work if you've been selling it as a game system. You can sell it as an all-inclusive, you know, multimedia entertainment solution, but games have to come first. And that means that gamers have to come first. And gamers are not first right now. They are nowhere near fucking first. They're like fifth down the goddamn list.
I mean, the bar has been set so low as far as consumer appreciation is concerned that when the biggest applause that came from the Sony conference comes from the fact that they will allow the selling of used games to play used games and no online DRM.
Oh, and I love how they're passing the buck on that one, too. Microsoft saying that, well, it's up to the developers and publishers to decide whether or not the license itself is one-time use or if it's going to work in infinitum. Really? So you're going to pass the buck on to the developers so that way you can essentially forcing them to vilify themselves. You give them the technology and then you say, but we're not going to make it mandatory. That's up to you.
Wink.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, see no more.
Fucking so, bullshit.
I mean, you got to at least admit that Sony knew all of that coming in towards the conference when they made that fucking YouTube video of like, how to play used games on the PS4. Here. Done.
Yep. Yeah, that was just the curb stomping that nobody saw coming. It's like, wow, you know, why don't you just have all of your stage executives put on gloves? And then just, like, have them take off the glove and smack the nearest Microsoft executive straight in his face with that one. Like,
and
really?
You know what? They kind of deserve it.
Oh, no. They absolutely fucking deserve it because fuck a glove. I'm going to drop trowel and just whip my cock right in their face. If, like, considering the way that things are going. And Sony has every right to. Because Sony took their fucking licks. They took their $3 billion in loss. They took the loss of so many exclusives. They lost Final Fantasy. They lost Bladestorm. They pretty much lost the confidence of half of the developing industry with a single stroke of the PlayStation 3. Saying the exact same things that Sega said about the Sega Saturn being about, oh, well, it does have a complicated architecture, but developers are going to enjoy that. Like, no, developers don't enjoy complicated architecture. It makes their jobs harder.
Now that's Nintendo's problem. What with that Wii U interface,
mm-hmm.
that controller bullshit.
Mm-hmm. So now that everybody has dedicated PlayStation teams, and now that the PlayStation is going to be coming from a place of, well, it's still complicated, but it's complicated not for its own sake. People can deal with that. You know, because really what they did with the PlayStation 4 is they just decided to say, every limitation that you run into right now with the PlayStation 3, we're going to raise the bar. So before you could render out to about 5 miles, now it's 15. Okay.
Okay.
Makes sense.
A little, It's just the increase in difficulty is not by new technology, it's by expanded technology.
Yeah. Like, what do we do now? Like, because we already see what happens when you take something as simple as God of War and then give developers a playground like the PlayStation 3. You get God of War Ascension. Look at this huge-ass set piece. I can't see Kratos. But the set piece is so pretty. I can't see Kratos. You know? So the problem now is that the playground is so large. It's so open that the world that the developers exist in on the PlayStation 4 is so open. What are they going to do? You know, it's not even the problem of like a Chinese menu's worth of choice. It's almost the problem, like it's the same problem that Halo 4 had, where I told you that 343 was worried that fans were going to be angry at them if they removed anything that they liked. So they put in everything that they liked. And they ended up with this huge, cumbersome, unwieldy fucking armory. So you give people the burden of choice, and people being developers, you give them the burden of choice of saying, it's like, you can render out to 15 miles now. You can do this with the skybox. You can do this with character models. You can have a 50,000 point articulated fuck face. And all that's going to do is slow down development. It's going to make teams larger. It's going to make profit margins smaller. Like, somebody's going to fucking swing for it. You know, like, there is no such thing as progress without payment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So now the PlayStation 4 pretty much says you can build the goddamn world. But that means that a development house that wasn't used to building the entire world all at once, all of a sudden has to worry about, well, how do we build the world all at once? And you're dealing with artists. So artists, if you give an artist a palette that has red, green, and blue on it, they'll paint with red, green, and blue. And they'll get used to red, green, and blue for 10 years. But then if you put purple in there and orange and yellow, then even though they knew how to make purple and orange and yellow with the colors that they already had, they're going to try and make it anyway. They're going to try and use these new colors, which is going to take more time because they have to figure out how to adjust their process.
Ah, man. It's an entire complicated process, but I think the part of the Sony conference that actually kind of put a little tingle in my balls, as it were, the nerd balls, was the fact that of all the titles they released, that they announced at their conference, a Mad Max game.
Which, considering the state of the gaming landscape right now, we could use one.
It definitely is one. I was on, if you follow my Twitter stream, you will find that, like, you see me guessing. It's like, wait a minute, is that a Fist in the North Star game? And I couldn't believe how close I was. I saw that half shoulder pad. I was like, wait a minute, is that?
Yeah, Nearest makes no difference.
Nearest makes no difference. And then, bam, Mad Max. And I was like, oh, shit, son.
Yeah. So considering the state of the gaming landscape with the post-apocalypse and all this stuff, it's like, no, we're getting to Know Your Roots. That's what that game is about. That game is Know Your Roots. Fuck your Walking Dead. Fuck your Left 4 Dead. Fuck this dead, that dead, you're dead, me dead. Fucking this Mad Max.
Fucking Mad Max. Just fucking wasteland barbarians.
Yeah, just who runs this fucking place? Fucking Master Blaster.
Fucking Master, I swear to God, if it's a co-op game and one of your friends could play as that little kid with the Ted Nugent haircut and the bladed boomerang,
So the PlayStation 4, like, that's it. I mean, Sony, like, so many people will just automatically say based on their feeling that Sony wins. And you don't dictate who quote-unquote wins, because I really kind of hate that people are like Microsoft won E3, Sony won E3. Like, okay, let's talk about who wins. You look at who wins not based on how you feel, because people are dictating this based on their immediate reaction, you know, the immediate pop that they get. And you don't do it based on that. How do you feel about it 12 hours later, 24 hours later, a week later? If you still feel excited for Mad Max a month away from it actually being announced, all right. You know, if you're excited about Infamous Second Son, sure, absolutely. Go for it. That means that, because I went so far as to say that impressed and surprised are two completely different animals. I am surprised by Mad Max. I am surprised by Infamous Second Son. Are you impressed with them? Based on what you've seen, are you impressed?
I will say that I am impressed with Destiny. Now, that's a game I want to play with you.
Yeah. And that'll work. I had a whole conversation about how Marty O'Donnell is the number one thing that made Halo rich and vibrant and real. I mean, yes, you can talk about Joe Staten and his beautiful direction. You can talk about the beautiful, you know, the beautiful and involving foley that helps build up the smallest little blade of grass in the world. But Marty O'Donnell has proven that he is what made Halo great. And Halo 4, for everything that people said about it, the most common complaint was the fact that the music was terrible. And it was. With O'Donnell on Destiny, I don't really care what it looks like, what it plays like. I care about what it sounds like. If I close my eyes, like, I can hear fucking Marty, and that means that something just works properly. You know, the Halo ODST Overture, for instance, beautiful song, because really they built the whole game to be like a detective noir story. And when you go, like, and when you hear Overture for the first time, you just feel that, you know, you really do get the feeling of that. So Destiny, impressed with Destiny. Absolutely.
I love the direction that they're going. A shoot and loot game? I'm on board with that.
Meanwhile, Gearbox is shitting their pants. Like, what do we do?
We had this market cornered. Now fucking, of all people, Bungie?
Yeah, man, because you kind of got to the point when it's like, well, Defiance, fucking cares about Defiance. Fucking Gearbox was just still rolling high and mighty and dirty, and they're fucking, and like, they're like giving Dave Eddings the crown, like, here you go, Claptrap, you're king. But now fucking Bungie's in the race, and it's like, we're gonna do run and gun and shoot and loot. Like, oh fuck, Borderlands 3, get to work.
Borderlands 3! Tiny Tina's terrible terror!
It would almost be worth it, because you know that they got to pop something real big for Borderlands 3, and you know they're working on it. So you like, but now they gotta compete against Bungie. It's going to be like the first trailer that comes out, it's going to be like, Jack is back. Oh, God, no!
Jumping the shark? What's that mean?
I don't know, Wheelie. Man. You kind of feel like you didn't get enough of Handsome Jack. Like Handsome Jack being dead is actually the biggest tragedy of Borderlands 2.
Well, but the part of the charm of Handsome Jack was that you never did see him. I mean, he was just basically shooting barbs at you through your earpiece, and that's where he belonged. I mean, like,
yeah, but when he finally did show up, you just went,
exactly. It was an appropriate buildup, appropriate payoff.
Yeah. But Jack fucking dying at the end, I think, was like the biggest fucking tragedy, because then it's like, I'll never hear this villain again. And even though I trust the writers who, you know, built Jack to be such a fucking badass, because I mean, they built Torg too. So, and Torg is amazing.
I mean, if the only way Borderlands 3 could possibly steal Destiny's Thunder is if you could play as Torg.
That would be fucking hilarious.
I killed you dead!
Oh, man.
Explosion!
I can do innuendo too! Blowjobs! Yeah, they need to do Borderlands 3 now. I mean, DLC be damned. They're at the end of the season, as it were. So, you know that they're working on something. And they don't even have to work that hard, because it's just a cel-shaded game. But there needs to be a Borderlands 3 within, I would say, about 2 years of the life of the new console generation.
I will say this. I don't think I'm excited for the PS4. I don't think I would have been excited for the PS4 no matter what they said. I mean, just by mere by the fact that they're not going to be as dickish to the player as they are with either Nintendo or with Microsoft. It was just like, well, that just made my purchasing decision very easy. I'm going to get the console that's the cheapest and will have the widest available library of games.
Yep.
I mean, that's all it really comes down to. I'm not excited over the features. I'm not excited over the prospect of Crackle making these new original programming that's available for PS4. It's like, okay, I'm not going to see it, but, you know, it's nice that it's there. But it's just by mention of the fact that they won out because they weren't dicks. Well, they weren't as big of dicks.
Yeah. So, as opposed to doing comments this episode, let's talk about swag.
Okay.
In existence now is the anime abandoned pin, which you might have seen floating around either one of our Twitters. These pins have just recently been printed. We had a cache of about 250 of them. We're down to about 175. The availability of them right now is limited because we're not opening a store for any particular reason yet. We're planning on doing a sale in which they will be publicly available. But the next time that swag is planned to be available is going to be Alcon for Bennett. He's going to get a nice little swag package in which a secondary button design and a commemorative postcard is going to be made available, and with Bennett at Alcon. Now, the problem is, of course, that Alcon is across the pond. I can't make it to Alcon. What does that mean? Well, what it is going to mean is that after a certain point, we are going to have a store. It will be store.benthesage.com. And the store is going to be run in the same way that T-Fury or Ripped is going to be run, where we're going to have limited sales. And the reason why is because I don't want to go so far as to create a stock from which to sell from. I would rather go so far as to take pre-orders and then take the money for the pre-orders and just order a specific amount of shirts.
Print on demand, as it were.
Print on demand, exactly. Now, when is this t-shirt sale hopping off? What is the t-shirt going to be? The t-shirt is going to be the Obey Bennett logo. When is it going to happen? We're shooting for July.
When July has not been decided yet, but stay tuned to mine or either mine or Mark's or both of us or our Twitters for any further updates.
Yes, and if you're not following me on Twitter, it's TH3Engineer, and really, my Twitter is the best place to stay updated in terms of the more technical aspect of the site, because Bennett does his best to retweet me, but he doesn't catch everything. So that is TH3Engineer. Put it at the bottom of the page. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we do want to make swag available. I can say that the pricing isn't going to be ridiculous, because that's the other thing about print on demand. With all the other Reviewniverse guys going through Cafe Press and all of these other quote print on demand places, they're talking about t-shirt sales of like $18 to $20. We're talking about something more so in the ballpark of $15 per shirt. Unless, of course, you need a 3X or larger, at which point then the shirts will be $2 more. Sorry, Mike Dodd. That's just the way it goes.
I'm sorry, Dodd. You're going to have to pay a $2 fat tax.
Yeah, that's really what it is. That's how I always feel about print on demand. It's like, I feel bad, but there's no profit in it either. You know, like, that is literally, like, the $2 that you pay to get a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6X shirt is the $2 that it costs me to get a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6X shirt. I'm not doing any markup on that at all. It's just, that's, you know, you're paying the extra $2 into cost to make that shirt exist.
The extra fabric, as it were.
Uh-huh. So, that's the plan. After the t-shirt sale, I will not say that we'll do another shirt sale, because there is a lot of logistics that goes into this. And really, there's just a lot of passion over the Obey Bennett design. Like, Bennett loves it. I'm getting a whole lot of mileage out of it since I made it. And both of us would like to see it on a shirt. We're going to offer the shirt and the little swag pack, which is a commemorative postcard, which is going to actually be a print of David's Jinro title card.
St- still the best title card that he ever drew for me.
And attached to it will be 1.5 inch Anime Abandon pin and 1.5 inch Obey Bennett pin. We're going to work out pricing on what happens if you buy, you know, both the shirt and the little swag pack at the same time. We're going to work all of that out, but we need some time to work it out because that Toonami shirt sale nearly fucking killed me. So gotta get logistics down, gotta get the back end of the site worked out in order to make sure that that all pops off correctly. And then I have to make sure that I can enlist Suckers to help me pack up all the orders, which, as far as I'm concerned, Suckers is pretty much Greg Hauser. So he offered. He totally offered. He was like, oh yeah, I can help you. It's like, all right.
Okay. Sucker.
Exactly. Suckers work cheap. So, I believe that that would be the cap on this episode. Bennett, say the goodbyes.
Well, that has been an episode of Super Tool Shed. A very passionate episode, wouldn't you say, Mark?
I would say so.
And say so. This is the future of gaming, ladies and gentlemen. It's here to stay. Till next time.